This is VOA News via remote. I'm Tommy McNeil. Moscow is defending its attack on Ukrainian ports amid a major export deal between Ukraine and Russia. Ukraine's President Volodymyr Zelensky criticized the move. VOA's Joe Ramsey reports.
Russian defense officials insisted Sunday the airstrike on the Ukrainian port of Odessa hit only military targets, but the attack is testing an agreement on resuming grain shipments the two countries signed less than a day before the assault. Long-range missiles on Saturday destroyed a docked Ukrainian warship and a warehouse holding anti-ship missiles supplied by the U.S., according to the Russian Defense Ministry. Ukrainian President Zelensky said the attack destroyed the possibility of dialogue with Russia. Joe Ramsey, VOA News.
U.S. President Joe Biden is said to be doing even better, improving significantly despite a lingering sore throat. This is a result from his COVID-19 infection. Which he was tested positive for on Thursday. He's been taking the antiviral drug Paxlovid. And the White House COVID-19 coordinator says Biden is feeling much, much better. And the Dr. Ashisha Jha says thank goodness that the vaccines and therapeutics work well against it. Officials have emphasized Biden has and his symptoms are mild because he received 4 vaccine doses and had started taking Paxlovid. O'Connor and said Saturday the president likely became infected with a highly contagious variant of the disease known as BA5. This is VOA News. U.S. Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen says the U.S. economy is slowing, but pointed to healthy hiring as proof that it is not yet a recession. Yellen spoke Sunday on NBC's Meet the Press just before a slew of economic reports will be released this week that will shed light on an economy currently besieged by rampant inflation and threatened by higher interest rates. The highest profile report will likely be on Thursday when the Commerce Department releases its first estimate of the economy's output in the April-June quarter. Some economists forecast it may show a contraction for the second quarter in a row. Brazil's right-wing president is running for re-election. We get more from VOA's Marissa Melton.
Brazilian President Jair Bolsonaro kicked off his candidacy for re-election at a party event in Rio de Janeiro on Sunday with a speech focused on God, guns, and family, as the right-wing leader attempts to claw back the commanding lead established by his main rival, former President Lula da Silva. The right-wing Liberal Party tapped Bolsonaro as its nominee for the October 2nd vote before an audience of several thousand in a Rio stadium, a move considered the official beginning of Bolsonaro's candidacy under Brazilian law. The nomination comes as the president continues to launch attacks on the reliability of the nation's electronic voting system, casting doubt on whether he would accept defeat. Marissa Melton, VOA News.
The U.S. House January 6th committee is planning to interview more former cabinet secretaries and is prepared to subpoena conservative activist Virginia Jeanne Thomas, who is married to the U.S. Supreme Court Justice Clarence Thomas, as part of its investigation of the Capitol riot and the former President Donald Trump's role in it. Lawmakers say that they're deepening the inquiry after a series of hearings culminated in a prime-time session on Thursday. There are plans to interview additional witnesses and reconvene in September to resume laying out the committee's findings to the public. The committee members hope to learn more about Jeanne Thomas's effort to keep Trump in office and the potential conflicts of interest for Clarence Thomas as a result of January 6 cases that have come before that particular event in the court. Israeli troops and special forces on an arrest mission are exchanged fire with Palestinians barricaded in a house in the occupied West Bank Sunday. Israeli police said that the local rescue service said 2 Palestinians were killed in that incident. Israeli police said that a number of armed Palestinians were killed during the hours-long battle deep inside the city, without specifying. More at voanews.com. Via remote, I'm Tommy McNeil, VOA News.
Today is Monday, July 25th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I am Chinua Dorfo in Washington. Coming up in the next half hour, Ukraine expresses anger at Russia's bombing of Odessa seaport as the Kremlin reassures on grain exports.
Russia's Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov offered reassurances over Russian grain supplies to Egypt at the start of an African tour on Sunday.
Global concern as the WHO declares monkeypox an international health emergency.
Since then, the outbreak has grown, with more than 16,000 cases reported in 75 countries. Five deaths from the disease also have been reported.
And Pope Francis begins a historic trip to Canada to apologize to indigenous peoples for abuses by missionaries. We'll have these stories and more next on International Edition. Stay tuned. Russian defense officials insist that an airstrike on the Ukrainian port of Odessa hit only military targets, but the attack tested an agreement on resuming grain shipments that the two countries signed less than a day before the assault. Long-range missiles destroyed a docked Ukrainian warship and a warehouse holding Harpoon anti-missile supplied by the U.S. That's according to Russian Defense Ministry spokesman Igor Konashenko. Ukrainian President Vladimir Zelensky said the attack, quote, destroyed the very possibility, unquote, of dialogue with Russia. Under the grain shipment agreement obtained by the Associated Press, both Kyiv and Moscow agreed not to target vessels and port facilities involved in the initiative. At the start of an African tour, Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov offered reassurances in Egypt that the grain export commitment would be met. David Doyle has more.
Russia's Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov offered reassurances over Russian grain supplies to Egypt at the start of an African tour on Sunday. His arrival comes amid uncertainty over a deal signed between Russia and Ukraine to resume Ukrainian exports through the Black Sea. But on Saturday, Russian missiles hit the major Ukrainian port, Odessa. Ukraine's President Volodymyr Zelensky called the attack barbarism that showed Moscow could not be trusted to implement the deal struck just the day before with Turkish and UN mediation. Video released by Ukraine's military showed damage in Odessa. The military said two missiles hit the area of a pumping station and two more were shot down. Russia said on Sunday its forces had hit a Ukrainian warship and weapons store in Odessa. Speaking in Cairo, Lavrov reaffirmed the commitment of Russian grain exporters to meet all their commitments. In a press conference with his Egyptian counterpart, Lavrov said there was a common understanding of the causes of the grain crisis. Since the start of the war in February, Russia's Black Sea fleet has blockaded Ukraine's ports. That's trapped tens of millions of tons of grain and sent global food prices soaring. Russia blames Western sanctions and Ukrainian mines in the Black Sea for the crisis. For Egypt, it's created a political dilemma. It's one of the world's top wheat importers, with 80% last year coming from Russia and Ukraine. Because of the war, Cairo is torn between long-standing ties to Russia and its close relationship with Western powers. Russia has continued to supply wheat to Egypt, selling to both the government and the private sector. After Cairo, Lavrov will travel to Ethiopia and Uganda, as well as Congo Republic.
That's David Doyle of Reuters. The White House says President Joe Biden's condition is improving after he tested positive for COVID-19 late last week. During the pandemic, Biden has received two vaccinations and two boosters, which experts say has helped the president ward off serious illness. VOA's Arash Arabasadi reports.
Last Thursday, the White House revealed the 79-year-old tested positive and that he likely has the BA5 subvariant of the coronavirus that has taken hold as the dominant strain in the United States.
Hey, folks, guess you heard. This morning I tested positive for COVID. But I've been double vaccinated, double boosted. Symptoms are mild. And I really appreciate your inquiries and your concerns.
The White House credits Biden's mild symptoms to his vaccination status.
this is a president who's double vaccinated, double boosted, getting treatments that are widely available to Americans, and has at this moment a mild respiratory illness. This is really good news. And this is both vaccines and treatments that are available to everyone. Really important that people go out and get vaccinated and avail themselves of these treatments if they get infected.
The president's physician, Kevin O'Connor, confirmed Biden's mild symptoms in a letter the White House released over the weekend. The White House determined an infected Biden came in close contact with 17 people. As of late Saturday, Dr. Ashish Jha says none had tested positive.
Obviously, all those people have been contacted. They are they're following CDC protocol, and we'll continue to follow them.
Biden's positive COVID test came just 2 days after a CDC panel unanimously recommended a new vaccine from manufacturer Novavax. That vaccine differs from the mRNA style widely available throughout the pandemic. As opposed to injecting material to teach ourselves how to generate an immune response, Novavax is a direct injection of the spike protein itself. It's a more traditional style of vaccine, as mRNA is relatively new, and experts hope it will motivate the vaccine hesitant to roll up their sleeves for a shot. Biden's positive test comes as the World Health Organization declares the spread of monkeypox a global health emergency. White House officials say the Biden administration is considering declaring a public health emergency in response to the monkeypox outbreak. However, no final decision has been made. Arash Arabasadi, VOA News.
And the World Health Organization Director General Tedros Adhanom Ghebreyesus used his authority Saturday to declare monkeypox a public health emergency of international concern. The action comes after an emergency committee convened to review the situation was not able to reach consensus. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
When the emergency committee last met a month ago, more than 3,000 cases of monkeypox in 47 countries had been reported to the WHO. Since then, the outbreak has grown, with more than 16,000 cases reported in 75 countries. 5 deaths from the disease also have been reported. As it happened the last time it met, the committee again was unable to reach consensus on whether monkeypox posed a global health threat. WHO Chief Tedros Adhanom Ghebreyesus says he has evaluated the information under consideration and has determined there is a clear risk of further international spread of the disease.
So in short, we have an outbreak that has spread around the world rapidly through new modes of transmission, about which we understand too little and which meets the criteria in the international health regulations. For all of these reasons, I have decided that the global monkeypox outbreak represents a public health emergency of international concern.
Tedros says the WHO believes monkeypox poses a moderate risk globally and in all regions, except in the European region, where it assesses the risk as high. Although there is a potential for further international spread, he says the danger of interference with international traffic remains low for now. The monkeypox virus has spread from person to person through close bodily contact. For now, the outbreak is concentrated among men who have sex with men, especially those with multiple sexual partners. Since the outbreak is largely contained in one group, Tedros says monkeypox can be stopped with the right strategies in the right groups.
It's therefore essential that all countries work closely with communities of men who have sex with men to design and deliver effective information and services and to adapt measures that protect the health, human rights, and dignity of affected communities. Stigma and discrimination can be as dangerous as any virus.
Tedros says the necessary tools for tackling the outbreak are available. However, he adds, the world must act together. It must act in coordination and solidarity to bring the monkeypox virus under control and prevent it from gaining a foothold in the countries where it is found. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
A viral photo of President Joe Biden's fist bump with Saudi Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman, whom the U.S. intelligence community says is behind the 2018 murder of Washington Post columnist Jamal Khashoggi, has generated a storm of criticism for Biden and his foreign policy. The White House says Biden brought up Khashoggi's murder with the Crown Prince, but press freedom and human rights advocates say the fist bump gave bin Salman the perceived legitimacy that he wanted. VOA senior diplomatic correspondent Cindy Sain reports.
Observers were closely watching President Joe Biden's first visit to the Middle East to see how he dealt with the killings of two prominent journalists. Palestinian-American journalist Shireen Abu Akleh was killed during an Israeli raid in the West Bank on May 11th. Her family had asked to meet with Biden in Jerusalem, but has been invited to meet with top U.S. officials in Washington instead. The State Department said Israeli gunfire is likely responsible for her death, but could not say if the shooting was intentional. Some human rights experts say the U.S. needs to do more. Sarah Yeager is the Washington director of Human Rights Watch.
Yes, the Israelis have done their investigation. Yes, the Palestinians have done their investigation. Shireen was a U.S. citizen. The FBI should be doing its own investigation. Leave politics at the door. This is an American citizen, and she deserves to have an investigation done that is independent.
But most of the criticism of the president's trip has focused on a fist bump seen around the world, quickly shared by the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia on social media, as Biden greeted Saudi Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman in Jeddah on July 15th. Brian Katulis is Vice President of Policy at the Middle East Institute in Washington.
Just the image after the murder of Jamal Khashoggi and the Saudi journalist that the CIA says that MBS had sanctioned the murder. There's just a lot of understandable hurt feelings and an outcry there.
Bin Salman denies he is responsible for the 2018 murder of Jamal Khashoggi. Katulis said that he feels it would be better for U.S. presidents to engage directly with countries that don't have perfect human rights records and bring up points of concern face-to-face.
I sort of don't understand the alternative argument, which is you cut ties, you isolate, you disengage, and then somehow magically that's going to read them the Riot Act and their human rights records will magically improve.
But Sarah Yeager of Human Rights Watch says she believes presidential visits with dictators can do real harm.
President Biden's trip to the Middle East is going to empower authoritarians, and not just in the Middle East. I'm talking about Uganda, Philippines, President Modi in India, leaders who are on the verge of authoritarianism, who are using repressive tactics, who are closing civil society, who are targeting journalists and imprisoning their political opponents.
Yeager told VOA she thinks that after the visit from Biden, the Saudi crown prince will likely drop all pretext of reform and crack down even more on women's rights and political dissent in the kingdom. Cindy Sain, VOA News.
In other news, Pope Francis headed to St. Joseph's Seminary in Edmonton, Canada, shortly after he landed on Sunday to kick off a week-long trip. It will center around his apology on behalf of the Roman Catholic Church for the abuse that indigenous children endured mostly at church-run residential schools. Between 1881 and 1996, more than 150,000 indigenous children were separated from their families and brought to residential schools. Many children were starved, beaten, and sexually abused in a system that Canada's Truth and Reconciliation Commission called, quote, cultural genocide, unquote. For more on this story and other breaking news, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Remember to connect with us on social media. We are on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. Search for VOA Africa. You're listening to VOA's International Edition. I am Chinedu Afo in Washington. Former Prime Minister and veteran politician Ranil Wickremesinghe has promised to form an all-party government capable of securing a multi-billion dollar International Monetary Fund bailout after being sworn in as President of Sri Lanka. But his first appointments have only angered protesters further. Luke Hunt reports from Colombo.
Hyperinflation has driven up the price of rice. A chronic fuel shortage has resulted in lines that stretch more than 3 kilometres, with people sleeping rough for days on end. No fuel also means that essential items such as rice and medicine are not getting into the countryside. Suleiman Saim recently returned from medical studies in Belarus. He says people who once drove luxury vehicles now ride in tuk-tuks, and people who rode in tuk-tuks are now forced to walk.
The government has been messing around too much. They've been playing around with our money. They've been taking people's money. They've been basically stealing it.
Sri Lankan debt totals $51 billion, and the country needs $7 billion to meet its debt obligations and to function for the rest of this year. But foreign reserves total just $1.7 billion. Of that, the central bank says just $25 million is usable. It's an explosive mix that resulted in hundreds of thousands of people marching on the presidential complex, the palace being stormed, and Wick Remesang's predecessor, Gotabaya Rajapaksa, being forced to flee the country and resign. However, protesters are also angered that Wickremesinghe has since appointed a close Rajapaksa ally, Dinesh Gunawardena, as the new prime minister, and that he ordered the military to dismantle their protest camp outside the presidential complex. Ganeshan Vagnajara, a senior fellow with the Institute of South Asian Studies at the National University of Singapore, says Sri Lanka's only option is to request a bailout from the International Monetary Fund.
The Sri Lankan economy is at risk of crashing after it defaulted on its debt. Growth is at -4% to -6% in 2022, and inflation is between 50 and 70% this year, and there's 750,000 poor people that have been created through this crisis. So it's a terrible situation in Sri Lanka.
Investigators say billions of dollars have been transferred into offshore bank accounts by associates of the Rajapaksas, leading to calls for an independent investigation into the family's wealth and an asset recovery program, although that could take years. The Rajapaksa family disputes the charge. Luke Hunt for VOA News, Colombo, Sri Lanka.
Thank you, Luke. Some observers expect further clashes in the Libyan capital, Tripoli, despite a lull in fighting that began late Friday. Rival militias and two rival governments continue to lock horns as main power brokers square off in the lead-up to a possible election later this year. Edward Uranian reports for VOA from Cairo.
Fighting between rival militias in the Libyan capital Tripoli, which tailed off late Friday, have left a confusing political situation as two rival governments continue to lock horns and political leaders flex their muscles to control more territory and determine who is more powerful. Libyan media claim that a militia loyal to outgoing Prime Minister Abdelhamid Dbeibah gained ground in the fighting over a rival militia which supports the ruling presidential council in Tripoli. It was not immediately clear what ignited the fighting that claimed more than a dozen civilian casualties. The three-man presidential council ordered a Libyan army unit, the 444 Brigade, to deploy in parts of Tripoli after the fighting subsided. It remains to be seen which political force now has the upper hand. Burned-out vehicles could be spotted on several streets, and some residential dwellings also appeared damaged. Fighting erupted just as Libya began to step up oil production following a stoppage earlier this year. The new head of the Libyan National Oil Company indicated at a press conference Friday the country was now producing 650,000 barrels of oil per day. VOA could not independently confirm the figure. The United Nations support mission in Libya called for an investigation into what prompted the clashes in Tripoli and insisted there be justice for victims and their families. UN Special Envoy Stephanie Williams was shown meeting with Presidential Council leader Khaled al-Misri. Libya analyst Aya Burwala tells VOA there are moves afoot between the Dbeibah government and Libya's National Army, which controls the largest portion of the country, to unify armed groups in the west of the country with the National Army. Edward Uranian for VOA News, Cairo.
This is Science in a Minute.
Scott Shepard of the Earth and Planets Laboratory at the Carnegie Institution for Science has written an article for the journal Science. In the article, Shepard proposes that there could be many near-Earth objects, or NEOs, that could be prowling around from Earth's orbit around the Sun to other areas of the inner solar system. He points out that most NEO surveys are normally conducted at night, and they mostly find objects that are outward beyond Earth's orbit. It seems that the glare of the sun has, until recently, kept these asteroids from being discovered. Shepard says that new telescopic surveys are searching for asteroids toward the sun during twilight. Among the newly found asteroids are 2020 AV2, which has an orbit interior to Venus, and 2021 PH27, which has the shortest known orbital period around the sun. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
Go beyond the daily headlines with VOA's Flashpoint Ukraine. Each weekday at 2105 UTC, join me, Steve Miller, as I put the latest developments into a global context with interviews and analysis. Listen online at voanews.com/flashpoint or in your favorite podcast player.
And to all our VOA listeners, please note we have moved our programs to a new website, voaafrica.com, from voanews.com. There you will find all your favorite VOA radio and television programs and a whole lot more. Find us on voaafrica.com, and thanks for listening. This has been International Edition on The Voice of America. On behalf of the entire production team, thank you so much for listening. Visit our website for in-depth coverage of world events and news 24 hours a day at voaafrica.com. Until next time, I am Chinua Adofo in Washington. Have a wonderful day.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
President Joe Biden has committed to curtailing the use of landmines worldwide. This policy change reflects the president's belief that these weapons have a disproportionate impact on civilians, including children, long after fighting has stopped. The new commitment will align U.S. landmine policy outside of the Korean Peninsula with the key requirements of the Ottawa Convention, the international treaty prohibiting the use, stockpiling, production, and transfer of anti-personnel landmines. The unique circumstances on the Korean Peninsula and the U.S. commitment to the defense of the Republic of Korea preclude the United States from changing anti-personnel landmine policy on the Korean Peninsula at this time. The United States will not develop, produce, or acquire anti-personnel landmines, nor export or transfer anti-personnel landmines, except when necessary for activities related to mine destruction or removal and for the purpose of destruction. The U.S. will not use anti-personnel landmines outside the Korean Peninsula, nor assist, encourage, or induce anyone outside the context of the Korean Peninsula to engage in activity that would be prohibited by the Ottawa Convention. The United States will seek to destroy anti-personnel landmines and their stockpiles not required for the defense of the Korean Peninsula. The U.S. will continue to pursue material and operational solutions that would allow the United States to accede to the Ottawa Convention while at the same time ensure the United States' ability to meet its alliance commitments. The United States' actions are in sharp contrast to Russia's actions in Ukraine, said Principal Deputy Assistant Secretary for Political Military Affairs Stan Brown. In Ukraine, there is compelling evidence that Russian forces are using explosive munitions, including landmines, in an irresponsible manner, which is causing extensive harm to civilians and damage to vital civilian infrastructure there. The United States is proud to lead the world in conventional weapons destruction. We've invested more than $4.2 billion in more than 100 countries since 1993 to promote international peace and security through our conventional weapons destruction programs, said Principal Deputy Assistant Secretary Brown. We'll continue this important work and remain committed to continuing partnerships to address the humanitarian impacts of anti-personnel landmines.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.